Today is March 11th, 2015. This is episode number 297 of the Apple Context Machine, a podcast for the Mac Observer. I'm Jeff Gamet, managing editor at TMO.
And I'm Brian Chaffin, the world's most preeminent fan of the awesomest band of all time called Boston.
I would have been so, so disappointed if you did not go down that path.
And if you would like to get the full story on anything we cover in this podcast, you can visit macobserver.com/ACM. And if you'd like to comment or question anything about the show, shoot us a note at acm@macobserver.com. I could probably point out that you won't really find anything about Boston the band on the Mac Observer.
I don't know. I think we have a new niche market. Yeah, and I'm fully expecting people to send us emails asking about Boston.
That's true. You're welcome to do so. You're welcome to do so.
And we'll put Brian right on those because he is a top man.
I'm a top man. Boston fan man, which is so not true. All right. Nonetheless, it's been a busy week. I think we're both actually really tired as we're recording the show because it's been a busy week.
Both
in and out of our day jobs.
And yet, here we are.
Here we are because we love the reader or the listener. Why do I do that? I can never call our listeners listeners. They're always readers in my head.
I know. And you do that all the time. Very
all
consistent.
The time. All of the times.
Yeah,
all 100% of all of the times I call our listeners readers at first. Except that time.
That's absolutely fascinating.
Nonetheless, we have great listeners. We also have a great sponsor this week, new one.
Yes, we do. So that's kind of cool.
That's like super, super awesome. It is Nitro. The folks at Nitro, they make the Nitro Glass Fusion
iPhone screen covers.
Yeah, we're going to talk about that a little bit later in the show.
Yeah, so that was
pretty
foreshadowing.
Excited about them.
Yeah, that's really cool. That's
good stuff. So let's see here. Let's start off with all right. So we got let's start off with the CIA.
Right, because I thought that was the biggest part of Apple's media announcements. No, wait.
Well, it probably was.
It's just now that we've said it, the CIA has to kill us.
Oh, drats.
Again.
Oh man. So yeah. we had a report from the. I'm so tired. I can't remember the name. What's the name of the publication?
The Intelligence.
The Retrospective. The Interceptor. The
Interceptor. It's The Intercept.
The Intercept. That's it. Thank you.
Sometimes it takes a village, Brian.
Yeah, we are so professional. The Intercept published a report based on documents obtained from Edward Snowden, talking about a multi-year effort by the CIA to crack Apple's encryption used in iOS and probably OS 10 too.
And I find that fascinating that they're so hell-bent on getting through Apple's iPhone encryption that they have spent years working on making this happen.
Right. And it is fascinating. There are at least two sides. There's probably an infinite number of sides, but there's two sides to this.
That would be a sphere.
Story. Good point. Actually, there are no sides on the sphere, though. There are no points, let alone planes.
Well, from a philosophical standpoint, now I'm wondering, is no sides creating the surface of a sphere the same thing as infinite sides?
No. No. All right,
it could be.
Let's talk about math. Let's save that one for our other show, the math context machine, because we're known for our math skills. Nonetheless,
yeah, that's at macobserver.com/geometry.
Yeah, no, not at all. So the what were we talking about?
We're talking about the CIA,
right? The CIA and the NSA, National
Songwriters Association.
God, I'm so tired.
Security.
This is National Security Agency. Good Lord. This is terrible. It's a terrible show. I wouldn't listen to us.
I can't wait to see how this one turns out.
I'd just turn this off right now.
I'm just along for the ride.
Both of those organizations have a vested interest in cracking everybody's encryptions, all of the encryptions all over the place. And the problem is that, I mean, like they all feel like they need backdoors, that they deserve, that they're entitled to backdoors into products like iPhone and Android.
That entitlement, I'm glad you said entitlement, because I think that totally nails it, and it really annoys me.
Yeah, you know who else feels like it's entitled to have backdoor access to everything?
Do tell.
China.
Yeah, really annoys me.
Philosophically, we on this side of the Pacific Ocean tend to think of the Chinese communist totalitarian government as the bad guys. Tend to. We do. We do business with them. Mm-hmm. We're not at war with them. But, you know, we know what Tiananmen Square is, unlike most Chinese people under a certain age.
Mm-hmm.
We tend to think of the Chinese as the bad guys. And and those particular bad guys also feel entitled to have backdoor access so that they can snoop on their own citizens. And, of course, really what they also want to be able to do is snoop on us.
Right, because from their perspective, we're the bad guys.
Correct. Exactly. From their perspective, we're the bad guys. And their own people are the bad guys. Anyone that threatens the Communist Party is the bad guys. But that's another story entirely. The CIA and the National Security Agency, the NSA, they're tasked with protecting us from an entirely different class of bad guys. Both on the national player front and also, of course, terrorists.
Mm-hmm.
So they want to get all of the information that they can, and they want to be able to go through that information and sift through it and find clues about what the bad guys are doing, and sometimes even just to find new bad guys. And in fact, doing that, slurping up all of the information, is easier than putting agents in the field.
It is, but it's not effective because you have to be able to actually do something with the data that you collect.
Well, you need both. I mean, you know, because we are, of course, national security experts, Jeff and I.
We are.
I don't think it. I haven't played one on stage, but I've seen lots of TV shows involving national security.
Well, we can't elaborate on that anymore. Otherwise, we will blow our cover.
Well, no, I can. I watched the first like season and a half of 24.
Oh, then you're ready to run the CIA.
Exactly. So, I mean, we understand that we're two guys sitting here talking about this stuff with opinions. We understand that. But
so clearly professionals.
But my understanding certainly is that you need both data collection and you need boots on the ground. It's actually one of the problems that our country was running into after the 9/11 attacks is that there had been a big pullback from having agents on the ground. And we suddenly found ourselves unable to actually do anything with some of the information that we're getting, which is what Jeff was alluding to. So you need both. You need to collect the data. You need the agents on the ground. You need a whole bunch of other things to try to keep our country safe. And it's a really hard and difficult task. And the problem, in my opinion, is that groups like the NSA and the CIA start to look at all of us as chumps from whom they get to snoop on so that they can find something bad.
I don't know if chump is the right word. I think they have evolved over time to see all of us as suspects.
Potential suspects at the very least.
Yes.
Yeah, which quite frankly is a natural progress in law enforcement and in this case national security. I mean, when your job is to stop bad things from happening, you tend to get very focused on that job. I mean, we all tend to get focused on our jobs, and we all tend to sort of, it's a human tendency to lose sight of the bigger picture, especially when your job is really, really important. And that's why one reason why it's so important that we have a pool between the people, the government, and the press, and even business.
Yeah, we need those checks and balances to keep everyone in line.
Yeah, we really, really do. And, you know, anyway, here's the point. Here's the point. We're so far off topic. The National Security Agency and the CIA both work overtime to crack all of the encryptions everywhere. They look for back doors. It's actually very important for we, the good guys, and again, from our perspective, we're the good guys, to find the back doors so that, generally speaking, they could be plugged. But the problem is with the NSA and the CIA, if they find them, they don't get them plugged, they use them.
Right. And that means those security holes are left open until someone else discovers them.
Yeah, or for everyone else to discover them. And it turns out that criminal organizations are very good at it, too. So are the Chinese. So are the Russians.
Of course.
You know, to me, the issue for these guys is that anyone being able to keep secrets on an iPhone, to be able to communicate secretly on an iPhone, means that they can't get at the data. And if they can't get at the data, they can't use that data to do their jobs. But the problem is that the rest of us also need to be able to keep our data secret from the criminal organizations.
Right.
Companies need to be able to keep data secret from the Chinese and the Russians and the criminal organizations.
Also, in our country, at least on paper, we have a certain expectation of privacy and an expectation that our government will not look into our private lives without warrants.
Yeah, it's in the Bill of Rights. Unreasonable search and seizure.
Right. And a whole-scale collection of everyone's personal information and personal data and communications kind of sounds like it doesn't fit with the spirit of the Bill of Rights.
It is entirely unreasonable, and we also have the right to the government needing a warrant to get data. Now, of course, there we actually get back to one of the complaints that law enforcement has had, which is that Apple is even bragging about the fact that its encryption is set up in such a way that not even Apple can break it, even if the government serves a warrant.
Which sounds pretty awesome to me.
It is awesome in the grand scheme of things, but it makes law enforcement harder. It's true, and it's a fact. But I believe that the good of... Well, what I believe is that you cannot live in a free society without risk.
And I agree completely. And to me, the notion of giving up my privacy for the semblance or illusion of security is not an equitable trade.
It's not. It's a subjective thing. I know plenty of people who are, who do think that that's a fantastic trade-off. I disagree with them. I'm in your camp, but it's understandable why the government's complaining about that. But I think that the bigger picture here is that the only way for us to be secure from the criminal organizations and from foreign governments is to also be secure from our own government. Because in a global world where everything is connected, you can't have one without the other. If the U.S. has a backdoor into something,
everyone does.
Or at least they have access to it, right? They don't necessarily get it, but they can get it. If it right. exists, it can be gotten by everybody. And so... The story about The Intercept is that the CIA, we've already known that the NSA has been working on this stuff too, but the CIA has cloned Xcode.
Xcode being Apple's software development tools for OS X and iOS.
Yep. They've cloned it so that it looks like it's the real deal, but any app compiled will insert code that, like, for instance, iOS apps can be made to report to a listening station. In other words, it inserts exploitable backdoors into apps, and then
okay.
if those apps were submitted to Apple. And Apple accepted them. If Apple didn't catch the insertion, those apps would be in the App Store.
Okay, so now they've created their own fake version of Xcode,
mm-hmm.
so that they can create applications that snoop,
mm-hmm.
which means that that they probably want at least their own people writing these apps.
Well, that's the interesting thing. We didn't really get a lot of details on how that works, right? What their plan is. Yep. But if they just wanted to make an app with code that makes the app report to a listening station, they wouldn't need to clone Xcode to do that. They could just make the app accordingly.
Right. And so that has me thinking they want just the general developer community to be using this.
Yeah.
And if that's the case, then that means they have to trick developers into getting Xcode from them as opposed to just downloading it through the App Store. Which tells me that most developers probably aren't going to be doing this. No, but if it's out there, that means that other governments that want to snoop will be able to grab this, reverse engineer the code, and then make it so that it feeds data back to them. Yeah.
Absolutely.
Well done, NSA.
CIA in this case.
Or CIA.
And they also could, jailbroken sites are not curated. Do you remember that incident where someone, and I'm looking at you, China, created an app that was advertising itself as a Hong Kong protester organization tool?
Oh, yes, I remember that.
And it was actually a surveillance tool. That reported communications and locations of the people using it to communicate, right? And it was on a jailbroken site, a site for jailbroken iPhone apps. And this is exactly the kind of thing that governments and criminal organizations can do when there are holes to be exploited like this.
Sure.
And it's so dangerous. It puts all of us at risk.
It's dangerous. It's very scary. Because, what it tells me is that if you're now going to get a Mac app that doesn't come from the App Store, mm-hmm. you need to really make sure that you can reasonably trust the developer. Because now, they're knowing that the NSA, the CIA has developed this, it just seems likely that it's probably out there somewhere. And there has to be one developer that thought, hey, I can just get this faster from this other link instead of going to the App Store.
Yep. Well, and they also cloned the Apple's OS X installer in such a way that will install a keylogger. In other words, the installer itself becomes a
Trojan horse.
A Trojan horse, right. And it'll install a keylogger onto your Mac. Now, what we don't know is how if these are deployed, we don't know if they have actually been used by the CIA or by anyone else, but we do know that this has been a multi-year campaign and that these findings were presented at an annual gathering of the CIA's encryption experts. And listen, the NSA and the CIA have some of the smartest math encryption experts, super brainiacs on the planet, right?
Yes.
So anyway, the CIA has this annual meeting called Jamboree, or the Jamboree, and where they get together and they share notes. And apparently a recent presentation was on their efforts to break Apple's encryption. And I mean, I don't know. It's just, it's so dangerous. Like on the one hand, there's so many hands here. You know, you've got the fact that it's great to bang on this stuff, because only by banging on it can you find out if anyone can break it. But the problem is, right. Like I said, they wouldn't report what they found. They would only exploit it.
Right.
You know, this is the stuff that zero-day exploits are made of. Zero-day exploit is any exploit that has been discovered but is not reported or patched.
And is being used.
Yes, and is being used. And, you know, for our own government to effectively be looking for and developing zero-day exploits, it is a dangerous thing that puts all of us at risk for having our personal information, our IDs, our credit cards, et cetera, stolen. It's just dangerous stuff, man. I don't like it. I don't like it at all.
It's dangerous. It's scary. But it just occurred to me, this is kind of almost like a badge of honor for Apple, because the NSA has been working for years to find ways to exploit iOS and OS X.
Well, you know, any encryption is breakable.
Yes.
The thing is how long and how much computing power will it take to break it? And of course, that boundary, that envelope, that description has been expanding as computers get faster. And, you know, Apple is one of the standard bearers here because, you know, Tim Cook has made a public stand on privacy, saying that
a very public stand.
Very public stand. He's spoken about it repeatedly. And I'm still wondering about what this business is with Apple in China, with Apple maybe handing over source code to China. I don't believe that report.
Yeah. I'm having a very hard time believing that as well. That just doesn't seem to fit with Tim Cook's Apple.
It doesn't, not only from a principal standpoint, but from an economic and commercial standpoint. Because
right.
Apple giving the Chinese access to iOS source code means that it will be pirated. It'll be stolen.
Right.
I mean, it'll be used. I mean, period. End of sentence.
Yeah, that's absolutely right. And then China starts making their own Macs. Their own iPhones.
So yeah, I don't know. It's I wish Apple had come out and issued a statement when that story. This was what, 2 weeks ago?
Yeah, that sounds about right.
It's been
a whirlwind of activity over the past couple of weeks, but that sounds about right.
It was the Chinese ministry that said that Apple had agreed to hand it over, and that may or may not be true. We don't know. Didn't hear a lot of reports on that. So it's Anyway, the point is this. Apple is the only company that's made a stand on privacy, because all the other tech companies, their entire business model is predicated on you not having any privacy.
Which in and of itself is pretty scary.
It's just terrible. We talked a lot about that, of course, in past shows. And if the CIA or the NSA can break iOS encryption, or if either of them or the Chinese can make Apple put in back doors, well, you can kiss all your privacy goodbye, because if Apple, Apple is a standard bearer here. And one of the recording, The Intercept was quoting an analyst saying that, the entire industry looks to Apple here. And so if Apple ends up giving in, or if Apple gets cracked, the rest of the industry won't be far behind.
Yeah. That seems like a pretty reasonable statement. It's, well, the statement itself is downright scary, but it seems reasonable. If Apple caves, then the rest of the market follows. That's mm-hmm. just not a happy idea at all.
It is not.
And then at that point, the only way to ensure that the government does not have a way to spy on your online or digital activities is to not have any technology. So no computers, no online accounts, no cell phones. It sounds so very Amish all of a sudden.
It does. Some arbitrary point in the mid-18th century.
Yeah.
Anything after that's verboten.
Yeah, well, in that respect, at least it saves you from CIA and NSA surveillance.
That's
true. At least from one perspective.
You just have to look out for the agent with the glue on beard.
Oh, yeah, I was actually picturing the even cheaper ones where it's the elastic band that goes around the back of your head. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
No, that's not good.
I'm going to take you by the hand. So let us, all right. Anyway, we got stuff on this. We got stuff on this, on the on the map server. We got stuff in the show notes.
I just want to point out, when you started to sing, I totally reached for a lighter that I don't have.
I love Boston. Nitro Fusion. I actually do love Nitro Fusion.
They're our sponsor this week, and they have
Glass Fusion.
Yeah, it's kind of cool what they're doing for iPhone screen protection.
It is. It really is. It really is. They're doing so. They were early into this game of making glass screen protectors so that it feels like glass and not plastic.
Which is nice. I mean, Apple went to the trouble to ditch plastic before the original iPhone ever shipped, because that's what it was going to have, was a plastic screen. Went to glass, much better experience. So it's great to see companies, especially Nitro, doing glass screen protectors so we don't lose that tactile experience.
That's right. And they have a new version of it called the Nitro Glass Fusion. It's Fusion with a Z.
And that mixes together glass with aluminum.
Yeah, so you've got the glass over your screen where you're normally use it, but the edge is designed to fit around your iPhone, and that edge is fused, hence the name, with aluminum so that it doesn't chip. This is a problem that a lot of people have had with some glass protectors is they're fantastic, they protect well, they feel good, they look good, but then sometimes the edge will chip.
And that just really sucks.
Right. And because if the edge chips, not only, of course, do you have a chipped glass edge, but then sometimes spiderwebs can result from that. You don't want that.
No, you don't.
And the way they've designed this thing, it actually looks, I'm not going to say it looks like an iPhone, because it doesn't look like an iPhone, but it looks like it fits with an iPhone.
Yeah. Yeah. It looks like it was designed for the iPhone, which it was.
It was, right.
So, and they even went so far as to give you color choices. So you can get black, silver, or gold to match your iPhone.
To match your iPhone, right, which is awesome. It's made out of a tempered glass, right? It's got that aluminum frame. It's that fused with that aluminum frame on the edge. You got to go look at this thing.
Yes. Yes, you do.
And I'm actually getting the URL.
I can totally tell you that.
Nitro.com.
Yeah, letter Z, Nitro, so ZNITRO.com, and you can pick one up for your iPhone 6 or iPhone 6 Plus.
Yeah. Yeah, it's good stuff.
Yeah.
It's like you peel, you stick. Peel and stick, they like to call that. Total edge-to-edge protection.
Like literal edge-to-edge, not just marketing edge-to-edge. So there's no gaps around the glass that's actually part of the iPhone proper.
Right.
And yeah, so it completely covers and protects the glass on your iPhone.
And it'll work with the iPhone 6 and iPhone 6 Plus.
Yeah. That's fantastic. So
check them out, please. Check them out. We're happy to have them on as sponsors. We'll be talking about them in a future episode or two. And good stuff.
Yep. And hey, thanks for being our sponsor.
Indeed. All right. So then there was the media event, the big media event on Monday.
Right. And so the first big announcement they made was HBO Now, which was and I'm mentioning that just because there might be a few people that didn't hear about that.
Yeah.
So, so a la carte HBO, you don't have to have a cable subscription package, and it streams to your Apple TV, your iOS device.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's going to launch in April, $14.95. I can't remember. Just under $15 a month, first month free. And it'll be there in time so you can watch season 5 of Game of Thrones.
And it's exclusive to the Apple TV at launch.
Yes. So they have, I think they have a full quarter before anyone else can do this.
Right. Which is pretty good deal for Apple. It was interesting to see Tim Cook pimping shows, as that was clearly part of the agreement.
Oh, I'm sure. Yeah. So I thought that was great. And as someone that's been a cord cutter for many years,
mm-hmm.
the idea of if I want to be able to legitimately watch HBO content is kind of cool. So I'm going to have to decide if I'm going to pony up $15 a month and start watching some HBO content.
Yeah, that's good stuff. So that was an interesting development. We were expecting it, of course. It had leaked ahead of time.
Right.
By the way, did you notice how that, I didn't catch his name, that executive with HBO, how he his carriage was fantastic, right? You know, he's clearly, he works out, he's quite fit. And, but the whole time he was looking down at the teleprompter.
Well,
did you notice that?
Yeah, he wasn't much of a public speaker.
No,
It's okay. I didn't realize he was looking the whole time. And so here's a little bit about how the sausage is made. So I'm watching the live stream and I'm writing articles at the same time. So I glance over at the video periodically. And every time I glanced over while he was talking, and by the way, that was the CEO. His face was down. And I just assumed that I was catching him looking down every time I looked over. But now I realize, no, he never looked up. That's fascinating. Okay, so he needs some help with public speaking skills.
Yes, he does. It's kind of fascinating.
Yeah, that
all
is.
Right. The big news, the biggest new news, tad redundant, was but I'm mostly pedantic, was the MacBook.
Right. Yeah, so the name MacBook has been brought back to life.
Yeah.
And it's thinner than the original iPad. So thinner than the original iPad, 12-inch screen, 9 hour real use battery life, Retina 12-inch display, new keys that use a different mechanism so that the keys sit more stable and flatter when you're typing.
Yeah, they call it a butterfly mechanism as opposed to a scissors mechanism.
Yes.
And then the butterfly mechanism sits on top of a dome switch.
Right. So it's a very stable, solid key press.
And individual LEDs for each letter so that you can have a lit keyboard without it being bulky.
Which is cool.
That's a huge attention to detail.
Yes. Oh, a new trackpad called Force Touch.
The Force Touch trackpad, which adds this element of, it measures the force with which you tap.
That means pressure sensitive.
Yep. So that you can gain additional control over OS X Yosemite.
Which is pretty cool. Also, how about those Thunderbolt ports? And SD card slots that it has.
Gone.
Not even a MagSafe power connector.
No, we have apparently, we are moving past that, and we're using USB-C.
Which is a new standard that Apple helped develop.
With Intel.
Yep. And so it passes power and data through a single plug. That's reversible, so you can't plug it in upside down.
And it's backwards compatible with HDMI and which ones? Backwards compatible with a lot of things, including HDMI.
Yes.
So you could use it for video.
So you can use it for video out. You can use it for connecting peripherals like external hard drives or scanners. Although Apple is really pushing this as a wireless machine, so they're expecting you to use Bluetooth and Wi-Fi for peripherals as opposed to connecting dongles for other devices.
Well, and you can't even connect dongles because it's there's only one port on there.
Yeah, there's one port, and I'm curious to see how will that perform if you plug in a USB dongle and then plug a USB hub into that.
Yeah, that's a good question. And can you power it at the same time? Now the thing, Apple has given us 24 hours of battery life on this thing, which is crazy. Like a real 24 hours of battery life. At least that's what they're saying. We haven't tested it yet, but I kind of have a feeling they're not lying. And that's amazing. What Apple has done in the computer battery space for portables is astounding. And, but if you have this thing charging, you can't have a peripheral plugged into it unless you can use something like a hub, and I don't know if you can. Does it do pass-through? Can you do pass-through power and data?
The pass-through power data combo that I saw the other day when I looked at Apple's site was for a video out, and they had two adapters, each of them $79. One does VGA and the other does HDMI.
Which is expensive.
Uh-huh. And so it had that. I think there was a USB port, and it had a USB-C pass-through for power.
Got it.
So it was like having a mini hub that connects to that USB-C port.
And by mini, you mean like essentially one port.
Yeah.
One port and video and power. It's like a splitter. It's not a hub.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, it's sort of like a splitter.
So, yeah, it's going to be... I can't wait to see it. I can't wait to try it. I want to try that keyboard. That 24 hours of battery life to me is super, super sexy as a person who will sometimes spend many hours writing in a coffee shop.
Mm-hmm.
The more power, the better. They're not worrying about taking a brick of any kind is huge to me.
Yeah. Yeah. And this thing weighs only 2 pounds.
And it's so incredibly thin. And it comes in what? Space gray? Gold?
And silver.
Silver. John Martellaro finally got his gold.
He finally gets his gold laptop.
Love you, John. But that's weird.
But we still love you anyhow.
Yeah, we are. Totally. Totally.
I have to admit that I'd really like to see Space Gray.
I would enjoy a Space Gray one. I like the black plastic MacBooks, that last generation.
Yeah. Pismo, that was my favorite Apple laptop.
Mm-hmm.
Actually still is my favorite.
Yeah, it was a sexy machine.
Yeah,
but the MacBook Air, come on, man, the MacBook Air. Choose MacBook Air or Pismo. Go.
Emotional favorite, Pismo.
All right, fair enough.
Not even a moment's hesitation.
Huh. I love the Pismo, but the MacBook Air in particular has just been such a gorgeous machine. Can't wait to see.
Oh, I love the Air. Yeah.
Can't wait to see the MacBook. Can't wait to actually see it. Can't wait to feel that keyboard. I want to see the screen. 12-inch Retina is probably right where I want it to be. This thing starts at $1,299, and as we were going through the keynote event with Tim Cook in the TMO Towers, we were all speculating that it looks like the MacBook Air is gone,
but it wasn't, and it even got a little bit of a performance bump.
Yeah, a little bit. Yeah, a little performance, faster flash. Storage.
Mm-hmm.
No extra battery life, surprisingly.
That's true. Yeah. And then the 13-inch MacBook Pro got the Force Touch trackpad.
Well, and the MacBook Air also got Thunderbolt 2.
Oh, that's right. That's right.
So now some devices have Thunderbolt and some devices have USB-C. Why wouldn't they just move the MacBook Air to USB-C? If we're gonna move it, let's move stuff. I don't care for that.
I have a feeling Apple's looking at this as different use scenarios for now, and then at some point we will see a transition, and USB-C will make its way throughout the rest of the product line. I'm curious to see if when we get to the desktop computers.
Mm-hmm.
And to the pro level machine, so MacBook Pro and Mac Pro, if they will continue to offer Thunderbolt, USB-C and Thunderbolt together.
Got it. Yeah. Yes. I look forward to it. It's so frustrating. You know, I was so on board with FireWire.
I still love FireWire.
And FireWire 800 was so exciting. And you know, Apple doesn't. I mean, there's that fine line, right? There's that fine line between sticking with the legacy until it's legacy technology until it's way past its useful purpose.
Mm-hmm.
But there's also the problem of moving on and so fast that. Investments that you make have no value.
Yeah, that's a potential problem.
And Thunderbolt seems like just a fantastic technology. And
Well, Thunderbolt gives you incredible throughput and incredible flexibility with what you connect to the port. Because basically what you're doing is you're taking a PCI slot that would go inside a computer and just making a little plug on the edge.
Right.
So you can do so much with that. And I need to learn more about USB-C because it's still pretty new to me. I'm curious how its sustained throughput holds up with Thunderbolt and with FireWire 800. And I'm curious how many devices you can realistically connect to a USB-C port before you start to have trouble.
Right.
Yeah, so I'm not convinced yet, and not because I'm being skeptical, just simply because I don't have the information. I'm not convinced yet that USB-C is a reasonable replacement at the professional level for the ports we currently have.
Right.
So, yeah, I have to wait and see.
Yeah, anyway, deciding to do laptop, though.
It is, and I'm looking at that, and initially I was like, wrong computer for me as a secondary machine. But the more I look at it and really analyze the way I use my computers, I can see where this would be a completely reasonable replacement for my MacBook Air.
I think it would be. I think it would be for both of us. I mean, it's going to be a little bit different for everybody. And the MacBook Air is still a really, 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 really nice machine.
But I do love the MacBook Air.
I was particularly interested in a MacBook Air with a Retina display. And we don't get that. But this is essentially the next generation of MacBook Air with a Retina display. So can't wait to see how that 12-inch looks in real life. Can't wait to see how the keyboard feels. And yeah, looking forward to it.
As am I. Yeah. So, do you have any thoughts on what we learned new about Apple Watch?
Well, we didn't really learn anything new, did we?
We
learned about pricing. Research Kit.
Yeah, we learned about Research Kit, which, by the way, I think is just absolutely fantastic. That was one of the really exciting things that came out of the media event, I thought.
Yeah, Research Kit. So it's shockingly open source. But it's basically a way for researchers to tie into mobile devices to get data for medical research.
Yeah, this fixes a problem that we've had for a long time, which is how do you get the information you need from patients in a more timely fashion, as opposed to you have to wait a few weeks or a few months, have them come into the office, you get a small snapshot, and then send them on their way.
Right.
This fixes that because now you can collect data every few seconds, every few minutes, every few hours, whatever it is that's appropriate for what you're doing, and you don't have to deal with extra office visits to make it happen. This makes it so much easier for researchers, scientists, doctors to collect the information that they need to provide better healthcare and just better services overall.
Right. It's huge. It's huge. And it's funny. I knee-jerk reaction. Only Apple could do this because Apple controls the whole widget. And then like 5 minutes later, and we're making it open source.
Yeah. So, well, you know, at least you had your 5 minutes.
Yeah. A little bit embarrassed by that, but that's okay. I'll live with it. Yeah.
I was actually writing about Research Kit as they were talking. So, which is interesting, trying to update an article while you're actually listening to the product being announced. Difficult. It was hard. And when they said open source, I stopped typing and I looked over at the screen because I was like, wait a second. They just said open source? Is this something different? I was very confused at first. And then, nope, turns out that's what it was. That was amazing. That was fantastic.
Yeah.
So... yay for Research Kit.
But go ahead.
No, it's your turn.
I was just going to say the other thing we learned on Apple Watch that was new was pricing and availability, of course.
Yes. So April 10th for pre-orders, and you'll be able to go into stores and look at them. And then April 24th for actually shipping. And I'm pretty sure that when I offered up my predictions for when Apple Watch would ship, I said April 24th.
Nice.
Yeah. Yeah. So there you go. For once, Apple didn't change a launch date just to spite me.
For once.
So, yeah, for once.
For once. You know, either that or you're a blind nut and you found a squirrel. Or blind squirrel and found a nut.
That was awesome.
My spoken typo or my...
Your spoken typo.
Or the imagery in the first place.
Well, the imagery that goes along with the spoken typo. It was a package deal and it was fantastic. Yeah. The pricing... You've said before, earlier this week, that you're just not seeing where the $10,000 price for the gold watch, considering this is something that's going to be replaced in a year or two, is a good thing.
Yeah, I don't like that. I don't like that price. I don't understand it. I think the first time I said this was on TDO on Monday, but Apple, in the last 15 years or so, Apple has had one pricing mistake, and that was the Cube, G4 Cube.
I will give you a second pricing mistake.
Okay.
Original iPhone first 2 months.
But that price didn't change. That was only the way it was sold.
No, they dropped it, the price, $200.
You're right.
And pissed off a lot of people.
Yeah, I stand corrected. Yeah, and then gave us a discount. It was $100 that they dropped it, wasn't it?
Oh yeah, maybe it was $100.
And gave us credit. Gave the early buyers credit.
Right. So that was an error that they corrected.
Right.
But the Cube, the pricing was just wrong, and it never got better.
Right. Never got better. And eventually went away. So in 15 years, you've got the initial iPhone pricing thing and you've got the Cube. Everything else that Apple has priced has largely been, according to the marketplace, perfect.
Mm-hmm.
Right? With that track record in mind, if Apple's going to price the Apple Watch Edition in gold, it's at $10,000 and $17,000. Apple has a reason for doing so. My problem is that I cannot back up that reason with any inherent value. There's not enough gold in that thing to justify the price. And it is otherwise the exact same device in all ways as the less expensive Apple Watches. Same innards, same display.
Mm-hmm, same innards.
Same digital crown, except for it's gold. Right? Unlike... You know, if you're looking at a watch, if you're looking at a mechanical watch in the $10,000 range and or $5,000 range, and you're comparing it to a gold version of the same watch, it's usually the gold value that's going to make up that price. And sometimes it's going to be the mechanism itself. Not always. Sometimes you're just paying for the gold version of a watch.
Mm-hmm.
And you're paying more for it because it's the gold version of the watch.
Right,
but the price,
you're paying for the physical gold,
right?
As part
and,
of that,
and the, it, and there's a huge difference. If your price difference is between $500 and $10,000, or I'll stick with that one. Then if your price difference is between $600 and $10,000, there's just not enough gold in the device. There's not the bands are not awesome enough to justify that price increase, meaning that it's being priced for reasons other than its inherent utilitarian value.
And it'll be interesting to see how Apple Watch Edition, the gold models, sell because of that.
Well, I do think that they will sell. Now, Apple itself said they will be available in limited quantities.
Right. So that tells me They're letting the journalists know they're not making that many.
And they're letting Wall Street know in particular.
That's what I mean.
So, you know, 10,000, 20,000, 30,000, 40,000 of those things in a year. I would call that a success. Probably worth Apple's investment in it. You know, maybe even 100,000 a year. But probably no more than that. And I can't, like I said, and they will sell those. There are plenty of wealthy people in the world who will buy that thing. And they will, and in fact, some of them will buy it because it doesn't have a higher intrinsic value.
Sure.
Right. I mean, the that's the nature of conspicuous consumption of wealth. And I get that, and I totally get that, and I also get that I'm not the target market for the Apple Watch Edition. Most people who follow Apple in the blogosphere are not going to be the target market.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, I'm definitely not the target market either. And that's okay, because Apple gets that, and they have different models to hit different markets. So, and it's pretty clear they think that the $10,000 to $17,000 market is going to be a lot smaller.
Yeah, and it's pretty clear that they think they can do it anyway. So, rock on. We'll see how that works. I don't know. I look forward to seeing how it works. Now, I did think that overall, so I was really hoping that the Apple Watch, that would be the stainless steel version.
Mm-hmm.
I was really hoping that was going to be at the $499 price point, but it's $50 more. It's $549 for the 38 millimeter version and $599 for the 42 millimeter version. So about $100 more than I was hoping / expecting it to be.
Mm-hmm.
Reasonable for the amount of functionality. Well, this is subjective. In my opinion, it's still a very reasonable price for what they're offering. It's an extremely reasonable price for what they're offering.
Now, did you see how much the black Apple Watch stainless steel costs?
Do tell. Because I have a feeling.
$1,049.
How much?
$1,049.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Somehow I missed that.
And that's the only way you can get the black band for the standard Apple Watch, the stainless steel Apple Watch. So if you want that black band, it's going to cost you $1,049. I thought that was kind of interesting.
That is interesting. That is interesting.
Yeah, I'm curious, what is so different between the $500 and the $1,049?
Well, there could be something that they're doing really interesting in the alloy. And there could also be something really interesting that Apple's doing in its gold alloy. I mean, Apple did invent some new alloys for these devices, for all of them, for the aluminum.
Yeah, that's absolutely true.
The stainless steel and the gold and the rose gold. But I kind of have difficulty believing it's a $400 difference.
Yeah.
Which is, all right. So it's going to be interesting to see how that works. The straps were all pretty reasonable. $50 for the rubber strap is a really good introductory price for a quality watch strap. We've talked about that before.
Mm-hmm.
The Milanese loop being $150, I was actually expecting at least $100 more than that.
Yeah, I was surprised. It seemed like it was priced much lower than, it was definitely priced lower than we were expecting.
Because yeah, again, remember that the Breitling strap that it's based on retails for I think $700 and sells on eBay used for $550 to $600 all day long. So $150 for that one is definitely a good price. The straps were all. Some people will look at them and say that that's insanely expensive, and I get where they're coming from. But as we've discussed before, in the world of quality watch straps, which really do have to take a lot of wear and tear, I mean, the difference, mm-hmm. if you go and buy a watch strap for $20 and go and buy a watch strap for $150, you will understand why one of them is cheap.
Yep. You know, back in the days when I did have to wear watches, and I didn't know that the band really mattered, like, you know, what it was made out of, what it cost.
Right.
I'd buy my Timex Ironman triathlon watch, and I'd have to replace a band on a regular basis.
Right.
And I just assumed that's how they worked.
Right. Sure. Yeah, of course. Why, absent other information, of course.
Yeah,
it's a very reasonable conclusion.
Yeah, I'd buy the $12 band to replace, and it lasts for a few months, and I have to buy another one.
Yeah, but what we didn't see was a lot of, we didn't see a lot of apps. Did you notice that?
We didn't, and I'm assuming that one of a couple things happened. Apple intentionally kept the number down, or the from the group of developers they invited out to help them fast track their apps, they didn't get as many to show off that they had wanted.
Yeah, that or as they had wanted. that would actually make a lot of sense. They got a month to fix that up.
Yep. And my guess is that now that we have the non-beta version of Xcode 6.2 out.
Mm-hmm. The non-CIA version.
Yeah, the non-CIA version. And we have all the extra information that's been released since the media event, that the number of developers that will have something ready to go on launch day will be much higher.
Right. Let's hope so.
Yeah.
Because this will absolutely hinge on the way. Okay. Just like with the iPhone, which exploded after the App Store and people found things to do with it, the success of the Apple Watch will depend on its on what people can do with it, and that will depend upon the kinds of apps that are developed for it. But it's such a new concept. It's such a new way of interacting with a portable computer. I think it is orders of magnitude more different than going from a computer to a keyboardless touchscreen computer.
Yes, I agree. And I hate to use the wording I'm about to use, but I will anyhow. This is a new paradigm.
Yeah, it really is.
Yeah, and I am really excited to see how this all plays out. And based on what we saw on Monday, I'm thinking it's more likely that the month window that I'll have before I really know if this is something I'm going to wear all the time or not. I'm starting to think that it's pretty likely that at the end of that month, I'll be a watch wearer.
I've known that all along, man.
We'll see. I'm keeping an open mind, and I have a very strong, well-established track record of putting something on my wrist with the best of intentions of continuing to wear it, and within a couple days, it's gone.
Yeah, but you also have a really strong track record of poo-pooing new Apple products or predictions of new Apple products and then embracing them.
And then, yeah, that's absolutely true. This is a confluence for me.
Mm-hmm.
Because we're mixing together two parts of how I am in a totally new way.
Well, it's two great tastes that taste great together.
Om nom nom.
And on that note, I think we have ourselves a show.
I think we do. And that's this week's Apple Context Machine. If you have anything to comment on, And that's this week's Apple Context Machine. If you have anything to comment on, add, or question, write us at acm@macobserver.com. Thanks for listening. And, oh, hey, follow me on Twitter. I'm Jay Gamet.
And you can follow me on Twitter at TM O'Brien. That's Brian with a Y. Our content is written by the good people at the Mac Observer. And don't worry, I'm gonna pull all that out for you, buddy. Our Sweet. Bandwidth is provided by Cashfly. The bass is by Boom, recorded just for us. And that's all for this week.
And as always, stay subscribed.
We'll see you online at the Mac Observer.
I can't wait till I learn how to talk.
No, Ainsley, I'm not actually going to delete it. Don't worry about it.